This episode of HPC Wire Soundbite is sponsored by Mellanox Technologies, the leading supplier of end-to-end FDR 56 gigabits per second InfiniBand and 10 and 40 gigabit Ethernet interconnect solutions for HPC and cloud server and storage clustering. www.mellanox.com.
This is HPC Wire Soundbite, your weekly source of commentary and insight on the HPC stories shaping the industry, with Michael Feldman, editor of HPC Wire, and Addison Snell, CEO of Intersect 360 Research. And now, here are your hosts, Michael Feldman and Addison Snell.
Google takes on Amazon EC2.
And NASA reworks cloud strategy.
Good morning for HPC Wire Soundbite for July 6, 2012, available every Friday on iTunes and Stitcher. I'm Michael Feldman, editor of HPC Wire, and I'm joined by Addison Snell of Intersect 360 Research. Hey, good morning, Addison.
Good morning, Michael.
We also have with us Tiffany Trader, managing editor of HPC in the Cloud, our sister publication. Tiffany, welcome to the show.
Good morning. Thank you. It's great to be here.
Hey, Tiff. Great to finally have you on a podcast.
It's wonderful. Thanks, Addison.
Yeah, there's been a ton of HPC-related cloud news over the past few weeks. I thought this is a great opportunity to bring you on the show and have you catch us up. And I think we all saw the Google news last week, the big announcement. They're basically going to have an infrastructure as a service play going right up against Amazon EC2. They've dominated that space for years now, and Google, obviously a big player, is going to go right up against them. Can you kind of give us the lowdown on what the announcement was about and sort of what it means?
Absolutely. As you just said, there's been a lot of really interesting cloud news the past couple of weeks. And the Google story is that last week at their annual developer conference in San Francisco, they announced a major public cloud that, as you said, is set to go head-to-head with Amazon's EC2 Elastic Compute Cloud. So the Google Cloud is called Google Compute Engine, and it's a utility computing service that, of course, lets users run workloads inside Google's massive data center infrastructure, just like Amazon does with its Elastic Compute Cloud.
And from what I understand, this is also an HPC play. I mean, this is a general play, just like Amazon is doing. They're gonna take all comers, and they actually have a demonstration of a technical app, right?
Absolutely. At first, can I just say that the strategy for Google makes a lot of sense, because utility computing, it's a volume game, and Google's ultra-scale data centers are a perfect fit for a public infrastructure cloud of this ilk. While the Google Cloud can be used for a range of workloads, Google has suggested a few primary use cases, including video rendering, data analysis, and as you said, high-performance computing. So speaking of the HPC aspect, the service supports enormous compute clusters on the order of tens of thousands of cores and higher. And during the announcement, the VP of Engineering, Urs Holzle, reported that every single one of these cores can be put to one specific task, so absolutely HPC. So at the time, they had about 770,000 cores. That's growing. They first put 10,000 of those cores towards one task, and was able to take a 10-minute task, what would take 10 minutes on an internal cluster, down to mere seconds. And then they took it a step further and allocated 600,000 cores to the same genomics app, which allowed for the discovery of multiple matches every few seconds.
Well, you're right, Tiffany. It makes a lot of sense for Google to be getting into this. I mean, what they have in common with Amazon is that they have to maintain their own very large infrastructure just for their own core business, and that includes excess capacity. That's just part of the nature of their business. So to take that excess capacity and start monetizing it through a cloud service does make a lot of sense. You know, they've got not only the cycles, but the expertise at managing these kinds of jobs at scale if they have the software infrastructure that will allow them to make those available to for public consumption, then it absolutely makes sense to get into that business.
You know, that's absolutely true. And I would venture to say that Google is in the perfect position to go up against the number one cloud provider. Of course, that's Amazon. And not only does Google have the massive computing infrastructure already, but they've also developed the intellectual property and the technical expertise to make it work.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting to see how this continues to play out, because you essentially have these sunk cost providers who are going to lead the way in terms of cost. They've got the lowest cost hardware platform, not because of economy of scale, although they certainly have that, but because they're sunk costs that have to do with their original infrastructures. So it's essentially a cost of zero, a variable cost of zero to offer these things, and it gets into just the management and the maintenance of these cloud workloads. That'll continue to be lower cost than, say, a supercomputing center reselling its own cycles, or another tier out from that where you get HPC clouds that are specifically provisioned for the purpose of reselling them, whether it's a Penguin on Demand or an SGI Cyclone, IBM on Demand, or R Systems or something like that. Then you get entirely different economics behind it.
Yeah, I think that's a good point. But I think Amazon and now Google, I think they're going to continue. They'll be the volume business, even for the technical apps, the HPC apps, for these throughput, especially these throughput applications like genomics and some of the other ones that don't need tightly coupled systems. But to me, the interesting part is sort of the heft of Google now going up against Amazon. I think they'll be able to compete with them on price, maybe even undercut them in certain cases. It's kind of hard to compare them. But this could sort of change the nature of where a lot of HPC-related applications for these throughput applications will go now. I mean, I think there's now a very viable alternative to Amazon, whereas before, I think they sort of had that market. And this will be exciting to see if, you know, there's going to be some real competition in this area now.
Well, although I don't know to what extent they're going to be motivated to undercut each other on price, given that this is something that's, in my estimation, being done opportunistically on each side, it's not like they're dying to do this for free. I mean,
no.
You'll do it if it's convenient to do, and you can make extra money on it. And if you don't, then it's infrastructure that you probably need it anyway. So I don't know if we'll touch off a price war here or not. They probably each are pretty aware of what's the price point to do this, where it's worth it to them or not.
Right. I think that's a good point. I think you might have different sort of price models, though, that sort of fit into their own businesses.
Yep.
I mean, Amazon and Google actually do have different businesses with sort of very similar infrastructures now. So there might be that sort of differentiation. But I think they will sort of try and get into those models to compete, you know, on what makes sense to their own businesses. I think it'll be an interesting matchup. It's not two companies that have the same business and then are going head-to-head like that. So it's just going to be, I think we're just going to have to follow it and see what happens.
Speaking of price, Google did say that their service, they were offering their service 50% cheaper than similar offerings than the competition.
Well, there you go then.
Yeah. They did not get into the specifics of how that worked out, but I did a little price comparison myself, and they did seem to come out a little bit cheaper than Amazon. And I'll also add that there's no Google equivalent yet of an Amazon HPC instance type, but I think that's only a matter of time. Google just announced this. The offering is less evolved than the Amazon Cloud portfolio, but they're not that far apart considering their relative ages.
Well, Tiffany, thanks for keeping us up to speed on the Google going into the cloud. Why don't we take a quick break, and then we'll come back and talk about NASA's evolving cloud strategy.
Sounds like a plan.
Mellanox's end-to-end FDR 56 gigabits per second InfiniBand and 10 and 40 gigabit Ethernet interconnect products, consisting of ConnectX 3 adapter products, the comprehensive SwitchX family of fixed and modular switches, software, and cables, deliver industry-leading performance, scalability, efficiency, and economics for the best return on investment for performance interconnects. Mellanox provides its worldwide customers with the broadest, most advanced, and highest-performing end-to-end interconnect solutions for the world's most compute-demanding applications. For more information on Mellanox's end-to-end connectivity solutions for HPC and cloud server and storage clustering, visit www.mellanox.com.
So we're back, and Tiffany, we're just talking about Google, but the prior week, NASA also had a sort of a big announcement on their cloud play. They were heavily involved in the open standard, open stack cloud API and middleware. And it looks like they're starting to move away from that in some sense. Now, you guys covered that pretty well. There was sort of a story, and then there was a story behind the story. Why don't you kind of give us a rundown on the news there?
Yeah, that's correct. There's been a lot of media activity about this NASA story. You know, first of all, just a little background. OpenStack was developed by NASA and Rackspace. It launched in 2010, and you know, since then, NASA has been one of the main contributors to the code base. But in May, a couple months ago, NASA revealed that it would no longer be participating in the OpenStack development, no longer be contributing to that code base. And the idea here is that the cloud-enabling technology, OpenStack, had outgrown the need for government support. Then in the following month, in June, the space agency revealed that it was moving some of its workloads to the Amazon cloud. Somehow, this was misconstrued as a slam against OpenStack. And
you're saying misconstrued.
Misconstrued, so yeah.
We're talking to NASA, and they're saying they still support OpenStack, although they're not developing for it directly, right?
You got it. So our assistant editor, Robert Gelber, he spoke with NASA's CIO, Linda Cureton, to set the record straight. And the main takeaway here is this. NASA is a very big agency and can absolutely support a multi-cloud strategy. In fact, given the cloud-first mandate of the federal government, they're supposed to be seeking out the best cloud for a given workload. So to be clear, they're not abandoning OpenStack. They're still using the technology. They're just also considering other options and also using Amazon and Microsoft Azure as well.
Now, you say this isn't really a slam against OpenStack, but in a sense, it sort of is. I mean, OpenStack was something... obviously, NASA was behind, and something that would be looked upon, at least by the government, a lot of people, as sort of a better way forward than a proprietary interface like what Amazon has. I think this is sort of the realization of market and what's going on, that you know Amazon owns a lot of the space right now, and they can't ignore that they have to, you know, they have a budget as well, and they have to live in the real world. It's, I think, in a perfect world, they would have stuck with OpenStack, and they would have even maybe continued to contribute to it and just, you know, not bothered with the proprietary vendor lock-in platform at this point. But I think, you know, you mentioned Amazon is sort of the de facto standard. Their API, even though it's not open, and, you know, maybe it'll be open someday, but certainly isn't now. And everybody sort of has to live with that, at least for the time being.
You know, again, NASA's—they have a lot of workloads, and I think there's enough there to support this multi-cloud strategy. And you know, their mandate is to find the best solution for the best price.
Yeah, like any business would do.
Right. And some of these commercial offerings are more evolved than the open source projects right now. And
we were talking before the show. I mean, Amazon is the most mature product as far as the. As an infrastructure, as a cloud platform, the API they offer right now. So there's no denying that, right?
Absolutely.
I think the big thing we get into, though, is all of the different standards that exist here in the open source. Now, OpenStack, you know, it is out there. We've got mentions of OpenStack in our HPC database. It's showing up in our research with a couple of people using it. But you get into these competing standards, and what we see is there's so many standards that it's hard to consider any one of them as actually standard, right?
Yeah, absolutely. And maybe we'll take a step back and just kind of lay out what we're talking about here with these. You know, some people are calling them cloud operating systems, but truly it's cloud enabling software, middleware that lets pretty much anyone create a cloud. And there's several options that can go with. There's proprietary solutions. VMware is one of them. It's to build your own cloud. But on the open source side, there's basically four main players. You have OpenStack, which is associated with Rackspace. You have CloudStack, which is associated with Citrix and the cloud.com website. You have Eucalyptus, and there's OpenNebula. And keep in mind, all of these support HPC workloads to one degree or another.
Right. And we see them to different extent. I think out of all of them, eucalyptus is probably the one I've heard the most about. But, you know, we see them all in different areas. I mean, it comes up. And I don't think we've, you know, as much as we're saying Amazon is the most mature, it's such a young, early market and so diverse. It's hard to really say, here's the leader and this is the way that it's all going to evolve. It's pretty early, immature at this state.
It really depends on the application. We always come back to the application, and it depends what your needs are. You know, so it might be the right choice for somebody, but for somebody else, an open source software solution is going to be the right choice. So,
Tiffany, do you think all those open standards are going to survive? I mean, that seems like a lot of open standards for sort of one application domain space. I mean, you look at operating systems; we have basically one popular open source. It's Linux, you know, Linux, and then you've got your proprietary, you've got Windows, and a few minor players, but like. Right now, we've got four open source.
Well, that is the major topic actually that's being discussed in the cloud community the last few weeks. And the debate has actually been going on for a lot longer than that. But this, we're talking about cloud APIs here and whether to clone the Amazon API or not. And just to give a brief overview of this, OpenStack wants to create a unique standard, and the other three, you know, the other cloud frameworks that I mentioned. They want to support the de facto standard, which is Amazon's API. The API clone supporters say that this will foster interoperability between the solutions and help create portability across cloud providers. However, Rackspace, the OpenStack champion, their president, Lou Moorman, pretty vehemently disagrees with this. And he has expressed in numerous talks and interviews over the last few weeks, he says that the Amazon API supporters miss the point of true cloud interoperability. Because the API is just the outside layer, and the true value lies inside.
I think that Amazon doesn't care about that so much. They can misinterpret it all the way to the bank, as long as it's profitable, right?
Yeah, absolutely, yeah.
In terms of maturity, though, there is room for competing standards in this case. None of these is really, cooked yet. I feel like we're looking at a 4-year-old in a room of toddlers, and we're trying to predict which of them's going to be president on the basis of their relative maturity. Right?
That's a great analogy.
You know, it's really difficult at this point to determine how that's going to play out. Amazon, I think, has a lead in a lot of different reasons beyond the maturity. The API. They're a big company with a lot of excess infrastructure and market force that's capable of driving a market in a particular direction, even if you get open source zealots screaming that that's not the way APIs are supposed to work.
Right, and I think now the whole thing's been complicated by the Google news. They've got their own API, which again, presumably is proprietary. Mm. So now what are all these open source, if that becomes popular, all these open source APIs, are they going to support that as well?
In fact, that's what they're saying. So Eucalyptus has licensed the Amazon API, but they say that whatever API becomes the lead API, they will support it. They will support all the leading APIs. It's just that Amazon has the clear lead here. 30% of cloud developers are already using it. It's the de facto standard, regardless of whether people like it or not.
Yeah, well, I think that goes back to it. It's still a relatively immature market. You do have a lot of people vying for sort of to become the cloud platform. And I guess we'll just have to see how it develops. But I think as of the past few weeks, it just got a lot more interesting. And we haven't even mentioned, you know, what Microsoft has done. They're going to open up their own platform, another proprietary, well, Azure is proprietary, but they're actually going to their own infrastructure as a service business. And they're going to open up that to at least Linux type applications. So it seems like it's just getting a lot more complicated to make those choices now if you have an application that wants to live in the cloud.
Yeah, there's other ones too. There's Rackspace with OpenStack. There's right. HP, which is also running OpenStack. In fact, OpenStack has 180 participating organizations in over 100 known deployments already.
Well, yeah, all these market dynamics and the increase in competition, it's going to be very interesting to watch how it all plays out. And Tiffany, I appreciate you coming in and keeping us up to speed on the latest cloud developments for HPC.
It was my pleasure.
Yeah, thanks, Tiffany. Hopefully I have you back on the show soon.
That sounds great.
All right, Michael, it's a pleasure as always. We'll talk to you again next week.
Okay, perfect. Talk to you next week.
This episode of HPC Wire Soundbite has been sponsored by Mellanox Technologies, the leading supplier of end-to-end FDR 56 gigabits per second InfiniBand and 10 and 40 gigabit Ethernet interconnect solutions for HPC and cloud server and storage clustering. www.mellanox.com.
You've been listening to HPC Wire Soundbite with Michael Feldman and Addison Snell. Got a question or comment for Michael or Addison? Email soundbite@hpcwire.com. HPC Wire Soundbite is available every Friday afternoon from iTunes or at hpcwire.com. HPC Wire, the leading source for global news and information covering the ecosystem of high productivity computing.